So I'm actually back in the studio with Holly Taylor from the SMU Women's Center, who's going to be commenting a little bit on some of the backlash that has occurred since an event that took place at the beginning of February at St. Mary's University. And just to give you a little bit of background on what that event looked like and what happened, I'm just going to read the headline that was being read out on CKDU at the time, and then maybe I'll get Holly to add anything that she thinks is missing. So, at least a dozen women and their allies shut down a talk last Wednesday, February 4th at St. Mary's University entitled Echoes of the Holocaust, forcing its relocation to a church off campus. The talk, given by José Ruba of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, was part of the Genocide Awareness Project, which compares abortion to the Holocaust and the treatment of African Americans before the Civil Rights Movement, and has been consistently denounced as hate speech. Despite the numerous phone calls and emails received by the administration denouncing the talk in the preceding days, the university decided to allow the talk to proceed. Protesters then took matters into their own hands, chanting and yelling to prevent the sexist and racist lecture from taking place. The confrontation took place for about an hour before university officials arrived to shut down the lecture. The Genocide Awareness Project has failed to comply with requests that campuses remain safe spaces free of discrimination at presentations across the country, with the University of Calgary recently charging the group with trespassing. So, Holly, is there anything else you'd like to add to that kind of recount of what the actual event looked like?
I guess I should first just clarify that it wasn't, in fact, through any affiliations with the St. Mary's Women's Center that I acted as a protester during the demonstration, and I feel like I should probably mention that just because the St. Mary's Women's Center has been getting a lot of backlash as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a number of concerned students and community members that came together, and there was not a lot of organization, there was not a lot of time for organization by the time the talk did come to our attention. And I guess further to that, just the fact that the university didn't, in fact, shut it down. There was a number of faculty members and security from the university who were on site and who had determined that it had escalated out of control, the situation itself, and for that reason it was located off of campus to de-escalate, but it wasn't to prevent any further harm from taking place or to protect any students from the assaults that were taking place.
Okay, do you want to maybe clarify what the assaults were that were taking place?
The verbal and the pictorial assaults, in my opinion, are the depictions of victims from the Holocaust, victims from the Civil War, juxtaposed with images of aborted fetuses. There are a number of people who expressed that they were felt extremely harmed by those images and felt extremely harassed, felt extremely discriminated against, and those are the images that I'm referring to, and just the essence of the presentation itself.
All right, yeah, just to give you some background on some of the things that the protesters are being accused of, I'm just going to quote a few things from some of the... There were actually three articles written in a recent copy of the SMU Journal, all denouncing the protesters and their disruption of the presentation and security's response to the disruption of the presentation to various degrees. And basically using the rhetoric that this actually prevented making campus a safe space for discussion and debate. So I'm just going to quote a few sections from the article just to give people an idea of what is being said. So I'm just going to quote from an article entitled Making St. Mary's a Safe Place for Discussion and Debate. And it says, St. Mary's University mishandled badly the disruption of José Ruba's talk. Further, in the days following, it failed to respond adequately both to the fact that a campus presentation had been disrupted and to its own earlier errors. Now St. Mary's faces the challenge of making our campus a safe space for discussion and debate. Will it meet that challenge? Experience cautions us not to be optimistic, but nonetheless, we must try to steer it in the right direction. We must at least try to prevent our university from again stumbling and falling. And then I'm going to skip down a little bit. The Friday or Monday night after the disruption, St. Mary's should have issued a strong memo to the university community that condemned the disruption, expressed its regret at mishandling it, and affirmed that it had learned from its errors. Instead, we got a mealy-mouthed press release that claimed that moving the talk was a victory over the disrupting protesters, that didn't condemn the disruption, and that, in speaking about balancing open debate against the rights of the community, both endorsed an absurdity, and in brackets, that speech can violate a person's right, and put a sheen of respectability on the disruption. Holly, I was wondering if you could comment on that last comment, that it is absurd that speech can violate a person's right.
Yes, I can comment. I think that we have the right as Canadian citizens to be free from hate speech, and speech can absolutely do harm. I think it was visible in the room during the event that night. There were numerous women in tears. It evoked a very, very strong emotional reaction among women and across the country. They've been, the Genocide Awareness Project specifically has been known for just inciting women, preying on their vulnerabilities in order to invoke such intense reactions. Jose Aruba was recorded as asking a black woman whether she would like to be lynched, in order to compare that to abortion, which is just insane, in my opinion. That's so harassing and so discriminatory. And the comments that you just read were written by a professor at St. Mary's, a tenured philosophy professor who has been very vocally going out of his way in order to speak out against the protest and to accuse us of being against free speech, essentially, which isn't the case. What this professor hasn't been letting other people know is that, for one thing, our freedom of speech was silenced. The protesters were there in an effort to express our dissent, and we're told by the police that we would be arrested if we continued. So there's no one defending our free speech, for one thing, which I think was designed not in order to defend people in their efforts to oppress other people, but to allow marginalized groups an opportunity to voice their challenges to this often oppressive norm. And that's what we were doing there that night, and we were silenced. So Mark Mercer isn't disclosing this in everything that he's writing. He isn't writing about how the Civil Liberties Act actually conceded in their policy statement that, you know, hate speech is not... free speech is not an excuse for hate speech, and that we do have the right to be protected from free speech. And
yeah, another interesting little paragraph in one of these articles says that we have to insist that the university and all university groups not engage in self-censorship. We must not fear protests or human rights complaints. We might have to ensure that St. Mary's not give in to bullies who would threaten to bring it before a human rights commission.
The language that they use is pretty sensational on all sides. And we're making an effort to be very real with our language and not to sensationalize and blow it out of proportion, but to really name what happened. And it's been very difficult to respond in light of, you know, myself personally being called a pro-abortion leader, for one thing, which makes me very uncomfortable. And if I could just speak for a quick moment about that term specifically, and just the whole framing of this event and this protest as pro-abortion. And that's so far from the truth. This is a pro-choice movement, which means that we insist that women are privy to their fundamental right to freedom of choice, and that choice isn't revoked. And when we have pro-life groups coming on campus and challenging this fundamental right, it's dangerous, because we're talking about removing women's personhood, and we're talking about removing their rights as people under the law, and viewing them in terms of their reproductive functions above and beyond their capacities and abilities as human beings. So yes, we see this as a very significant challenge to our rights, and not a place for these discussions to be taking place in university campus.
What do you say to those who contend, as in at least one of these articles is the point is made, that says that the protesters were unwilling to stay and engage in debate with the presenter? Yeah, just one quote again from one of these articles, this one by Julie Culshaw, published in the SMU Journal. It says that, given the fact that Miss Taylor never heard anything that Jojo Ruba had to say, I wonder how she can make any of her statements. What would you say to those who criticize that?
That I had done a lot of research before the event and was very familiar with what Jose Ruba was there to say, and that was really the what led us to act the way that we did. And
yeah. Do you think that there would have been a space for engaging in debate? And what do you like?
I think that there are. I think that Yeah, lots of us have been engaging in debate before and afterhand about this very issue. I think that, yeah, most of us are graduate students. We spent a lot of time debating and talking and thinking about this issue, and that within the context in question, that there was no space for debate, that Jose Aruba had instructed the women in the room that they were to sit silently and consume his presentation, and that there would be a space for questions after we'd essentially been assaulted by these images. That just to back up for a minute, there was an emergency risk assessment meeting held earlier that day in which they had agreed not to show any explicitly violent imagery. And now, in the aftermath, they've claimed that they thought that meant not to show billboards. So I was pretty confused about how that all went down, but it did. And basically, they had deliberately drawn women in to assault them, you know, exploit their vulnerabilities, upset them. It wasn't a safe space. It wasn't a space that we were willing to engage in debate with.
So we've been talking about some of the backlash that some of the protesters, and specifically the SMU Women's Center, just because it occurred on SMU campus, not necessarily because the Women's Center organized the shutdown. But some of the backlash that has occurred there. So, Holly, can you tell us a little bit about what the response of the university was, both, I guess, in the lead up to the talk, because there were a bunch of letters and phone calls made to the university expressing concerns that the talk was going to be allowed to proceed beforehand, and also after, and how that's affected you and the Women's Center?
Well, before the talk, it came to the attention of a number of concerned individuals about 24 hours before the presentation was scheduled to take place. So we, throughout our networks, organized. We were contacting security and external affairs, the president, the student union, the conflict resolution advisor at St. Mary's, anyone who we thought might have any stake in being able to help protect us from this event taking place on campus. And they called an emergency last-minute risk assessment meeting and determined that the talk would go forward as scheduled, based on the conditions that we would have the right to freely protest and that there would be no explicitly graphic imagery used. This is what we were told before the protest. However, neither of those conditions were followed through. In the aftermath, the university itself has issued issued a press statement regretting the fact that they had shut the talk down and, you know, maintaining the fact that they're committed to academic freedom. But other than that, has not been overly vocal. There have been a few specific faculty members who have been speaking out publicly against it, Mark Mercer specifically. There was an article in the Chronicle Herald where Chuck Bridges, who is the director of student services at St. Mary's, was also interviewed about the university's decision. But, yeah, like I say, Mark Mercer has been very vocal, and it's been problematic for the Women's Center because he's using his position in an effort to convince everyone else that his opinion is, in fact, truth, and it really is his opinion, and it's been difficult. He showed up at the Women's Center one day screaming at student volunteers, and, you know, that's supposed to be a safe space, and we're trying to do our work, and he's really been hindering that, liaising with pro-life groups and just fueling them in their efforts to ratify on campus, which has been a new challenge. But yeah, a lot of us have been involved in meetings at the university. We're actually meeting with another individual this afternoon, but it's been a process. It's been a very time-consuming and exhausting process.
Yeah, you mentioned to me during the break that at a few other universities, there are examples of the university actually backing up protesters. Can you, and also defending the blocking of anti-choice groups from actually ratifying on the grounds that they are promoting sexist behavior and ideas? Can you comment on that at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, York recently unanimously decided not to support a pro-life group on campus with their student funding. UFC has voted to sanction anti-abortion groups. There's universities across the province who are taking across the country, I'm sorry, who are taking a strong stand against anti-choice groups. And I think that in doing so, they're acknowledging that they're not a club, they're not a group that's based on any interest rather than removing women's human rights. And that's not the opposite of pro-choice. And it's been difficult because the specific group that is seeking to ratify has been threatening to, have the Women's Center levy removed. Not that it's within their power to do that, but the fact that they are, making that threat has been very disheartening, because we're here to provide the women. I say we, as in the Women's Center. I've been involved for a long time, and again, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Women's Center here today, but it has been hard, because in the midst of everything that's happening at St. Mary's, it's very critical that women do understand there's a safe space on campus, that there is a pro-choice space on campus. And shortly after the event, we put a big, huge pro-choice sign on our window, and I think that it was necessary to do that, to let people know that we are here and that we are maintaining our position as a pro-choice advocate for women at St. Mary's.
Do you think there's any prospects that St. Mary's University will take a strong stand similar to the stances that other universities have taken, or does that look pretty unlikely?
I honestly couldn't comment, because there is a new student union coming in.
Okay.
It's a new executive. And I haven't met personally with the new executive yet. I will be doing that, and I will be, working hard to try to make sure that this doesn't happen, because I feel like it's a dangerous situation. I feel like, there's been some mediation taking place between the Women's Center and this pro-life group, and their suggestion at reconciliation was having diaper drives for single moms, and I really think that's indicative of their understanding around, the issues that women are facing with regards to being able to control their own bodies and what their bodies are producing.
Has the Women's Center ever come under attack like this before for taking stances? I know you've been involved for a long time.
Yeah, there have been incidents where the Women's Center has been criticized for specific actions, never to this degree, but never to this extent, for sure. But there was an incident a couple years ago where there was a very sexist presidential campaign poster for the student elections, and we had advocated to have the poster removed, and a lot of the same people who were involved in this, defending the right to free speech, defending the right to freedom of expression. And, Mark Mercer's been quoted as saying, there should be no limits on hate speech. Even if he's saying black people suck, he should be allowed to say that. Mm-hmm. That's his opinion. That's not the case. He shouldn't be allowed to say black people suck.
No, he shouldn't. that's actually really shocking that would be becoming coming out. Is there anything you want to add, Holly, before we finish up?
I'd just like to add that the BC Supreme Court did just side with the student union ban on a pro-life group. This just happened on March 9th, and I think that this is significant. This group had actually complained to the BC Human Rights Tribunal, alleging the right to free speech was being violated, and the tribunal refused to hear the case. The next year, the group went back to the tribunal, alleging the society was restricting their right to religious freedom, and again, the case was thrown out. So this is the Supreme Court, and I think that this I'm hopeful that this is going to set a precedent across the country for other student groups to take an active stance and protect the students on their campus from hate speech.
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult, though, because while access to abortion in much of the country is something that a lot of people take for granted, it is an ongoing struggle, especially in the Maritimes. So do you think that's having an impact on how this is being received?
I wonder about that. And I know that in another of Mercer's articles, he said, abortion rights aren't in any peril in Canada. What are they crying about? Basically is the essence of his comment. And, that couldn't be further from the truth. Women have such limited access to abortion in the Maritime provinces. There's no access in PEI. Women are having to pay for it in New Brunswick. There are no private clinics. Abortion rights have been under siege in the past, in the recent, we see this as, and even Bill C-484, the recent proposal of a bill purporting to give personhood to a fetus, which could definitely put women's right to abortion in peril. So No, it's not something that's to be taken for granted, and it is something that we feel very strongly about.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thanks, Holly, for coming in. I really appreciated having the opportunity to talk to you and to clear up some of the stuff that's been reported